I'm Grant.
And this is
Whiskers.
We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest.
That's right. Welcome back, everybody. We're glad to hear you. Wait, we can't. Let's do that backwards. How have you been, dear?
I've been okay.
Yeah?
I've been okay. Yeah. Have been enjoying a recently rediscovered hobby.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is it playing with your man parts?
No, you play with your man parts.
That's true.
Your little man parts.
And by that, we mean building Gunpla. Let's let everyone in on that inside joke before it goes too far.
He likes to weekly play with his little men and all their little parts.
What is the hobby that
sometimes
you have been...
I do it too, but not as much as you do.
What is this hobby that you've been enjoying?
You reminded me. You asked me, if I missed my dad joke a day calendar.
I did.
And the tradition we had literally all of last year, where I would read you the joke of the day before we went to bed, and so.
So, okay.
I have enjoyed finding some jokes for you.
There's a lot of catching up to do. People are hearing this in June.
Well, we better get on it.
Okay.
What happened when the cheese shop exploded?
Debris was everywhere. Yeah, I know this one.
Yeah, but I like it, so I wanted them to know. What's a piece of bread's least favorite chore?
I don't know, but it gets toasty when it's upset.
Doing a loaf of laundry.
Oh, that's not even a thing that exists.
What did the bunny say to the carrot?
I'm gonna eat you.
It's been nice gnawing on you. Why did the tomato blush?
How could you tell? It's already red.
Because it saw the salad dressing.
Oh.
What vegetable do sailors hate the most?
Are all of these about food?
This might be the food section.
Tell me about the vegetable and the sailors.
Leeks! What kind of room doesn't have doors?
A broom.
A mushroom.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Why couldn't the sesame seed leave the casino?
You know what? I think it could. I think there's no way on earth someone would stop a sesame seed from leaving a casino.
Because it was on a roll.
Oh, okay. So it was able, just unwilling to leave the casino.
How do you make an apple turnover?
When you look it up, be sure to actually click the link and follow through so you know you're not getting an AI summary of a recipe that doesn't actually work. That's my advice.
Push it down a hill. What does garlic do when it gets hot?
You're going to just get hungry. I'm going to get hungry. What
it
is this?
It takes its clothes off.
Oh, boy.
Fine, I'll jump ahead and see if there's one not about food. What do you call a huge pile of cats?
What do I call a huge pile of cats?
Yeah.
An allergy nightmare.
A meowtin. Why wouldn't the shrimp share his treasure?
Why wouldn't the shrimp share his treasure? Because
mm-hmm.
He's a little shellfish.
Yeah. Why are ghosts bad liars?
Why are ghosts bad liars? Because you can see right through them.
Yeah. Why are mountains so funny?
I don't know, darling. Why are mountains so funny?
They're just hill areas. Why is grass so dangerous?
Why is grass so dangerous? Again, allergy nightmare.
Because it's full of blades.
You should do the one I really liked yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Let me find that one.
It's in the food section, I imagine.
No, actually, it wasn't. What do you call a fake noodle? What do you call a fake noodle?
A fake noodle? I don't know.
An impasta.
That's right, everyone. We are here to talk about the next episode of Sequest DSV after a brief hiatus. Like I said, on our Blue Sky account, we had some unplanned delays run up to a very planned vacation. But now we are back with episode 10 of the second season, mm-hmm. Dead End.
Yeah.
This is written by Carlton Eastlake, back from writing A Sympathy for the Deep and The Sincerest Form of Flattery, and directed by new-to-Sequest Stephen Robman, who's primarily a theater director, but did all of the 80s family sitcoms, did 22 episodes of Party of Five, and he married the actor who played the evil neighbor lady in Edward Scissorhands, Kathy Baker.
Oh.
This is Mr. Kathy Baker directing this one. Ah.
Yeah.
Have you been looking forward to this one, dear?
I have. I like this one.
Yeah.
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 It's I think it's a good one. I think it's one of the stronger ones of the season.
I think it uncontroversially, in my mind, the best episode of season two so far.
Yeah.
It is also incredibly dumb.
I don't care.
That's the thing. Remember that for when we get through the whole thing.
So, in this episode,
yes,
we got Lucas, O'Neill, Brody, and Henderson, who are coming back on a launch from a seminar on sexual harassment. Can't imagine why Brody had to go to this. I'm questioning why everyone else did, but maybe they just wanted the group rate. But Brody makes so much sense.
So the boys are in the back of the launch having karaoke night with their... That is the song they are singing. Yeah. And they have the, like, plastic bottles of Kool-Aid where you tear off the top.
Yeah.
Yes.
And did you notice...
That's what they're drinking from.
The giant bowl of, like, brightly colored popcorn? I don't know why popcorn is brightly colored
it's
in the future.
It's the future.
But that's the past. And let me tell you, I didn't eat a lot of popcorn that color in like 2019. Can't say. It was really a thing.
But they are celebrating having completed their mandatory sexual harassment training. You know how a ship with hundreds of sailors does this four at a time?
Henderson failed.
Yeah,
apparently, she threatened too much violence for sexual harassment.
Because she's the cool girl. She doesn't get bad out of shape. She doesn't take this all too seriously. She's the cool girl.
I just don't... I'm like, what do you... How... What? What?
I think that's the thing. You have to, like... Like we said at the beginning of the season, where our new cast is introduced, the hot young woman is much more available, much more sexually available than her predecessor.
Yeah.
And that includes making it explicit in the text that, what's the big deal?
Mm-hmm. Brody's come a long way, though, let me tell you.
Hey, he knows what answers to put on the Scantron. Does it affect his day-to-day life and behavior?
No. Probably not. But he knows. How long would it take them to go through this type of cycle to get their whole crew through their like sexual harassment training?
This is what Lucas failed to account for when he demanded a salary.
Is that now he
is subject to all these other regulations and requirements.
See, what he doesn't know, though, is that for years, all the rest of the crew had to do mandated reporter training because of him.
Everybody who's around in those days are like, we're letting him go with Brody?
Well, he's over 18. We can't report that for anything, I guess.
O'Neill's there. He'll make sure no one's having too much fun.
O'Neill went because he thought he was going to get tips on...
He just saw the first three letters of the title and was like, yes, I need some.
Tips on
How?
Sex.
How? Where does it go?
My last date went bad. What do I do?
Yeah. So they are whooping it up with three passing grades between the four of them on their way back home, and they catch an out-of-place signal. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Tim's listening to it, and he's like, this can't be right. The coordinates of the signal are, like, halfway around the world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And as he's listening, he's like, says it's the UEO Endeavor. And they're like, oh, that's Marcus Rawlings' ship. But the coordinates would be right, because he is halfway around the world right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This famous explorer is checking out a trench that is not this trench. Different trench.
The Hemingway Trench.
Mm-hmm. He discovered it.
Yeah. So that's a trench I'm not going to Google for you. As they're, like, listening to this and, like, following it, things are getting really, like, rocky. Lots of turbulence.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, man, we should, like, radio into the SeaQuest. And as they're trying to radio in, Ortiz is barely getting any signal. It's all getting broken up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Knows that they're trying to give him, like, info, but can't understand any of it.
While this rapid, massive downflow is pushing the launch further down toward the ocean floor, the pressure is increasing. A leak is sprung from the skin. They are taking on water.
They're going 22 meters a second.
Yeah, downward, real fast.
Yeah.
The oxygen masks come out, and Henderson needs a hand putting hers on because it's all she can do to keep the yoke steady.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have a free hand.
So Brody helps, and then they're all getting their masks on as, like, O'Neill is still trying to radio the SeaQuest. As they see that there is a hole in the ocean floor that is just sucking them in.
Yeah, so someone pulled the plug out, like, in many cartoons of all of our youths.
Yes. And then O'Neill is like, oh man, I gotta pray, because remember, I'm the religious one.
Yes.
So gonna do that, and mm-hmm. some signs of the cross over here, because I'm religious.
Yep, he asked the Lord to take control, to take hold of his soul as they go down. And then they crash down through this long, long tunnel and emerge into a deep submerged cave with this huge breathable air pocket.
Yes, but they crash down on this ledge, and I don't know what the fuck O'Neill was doing. Instead of, like, holding on and strapping in against the seat, he's, like, bracing himself on the ceiling, which then sends him, like, fucking flying and ricocheting with, like, the mask's, like, cord bringing him back. Mm-hmm. And he somehow breaks his leg.
Yes.
Made more sense for him to, like, get a concussion, have some, like, bleeding on his head, because that's what hits shit. I don't know how he breaks his leg.
Should have put his leg in the Lord's hands. His soul was doing fine all along.
Fuck, I should have gone to confession the last 4 weeks. This is punishment. God knows.
Mm-hmm. There's got to be a chaplain on the SeaQuest, right? Crew that size. They've got a chaplain.
They've got to have something.
They've got to have
Maybe
something.
Maybe they all just, like, vidphone their religious affiliations.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, oh, can you imagine doing confession in the cafeteria?
Everybody shut up. Everybody turn around. The secret.
You don't get to hear this.
This is privileged information. Shush. Stop throwing potatoes at me.
Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. And I'm going to tell you and 100 of my closest friends.
Tony Piccolo's leaning in.
Oh. What have you done? And then he's making commentary of, like, that's not a sin. That's nothing. You want to hear about a sin? Let me tell you. Hey, priest man, sir.
Remember, you didn't do no sins on Tuesday, right? Right? You and me, we were sinless on Tuesday, remember? But I love the miniature that they filmed for the establishing shot in this cavern. It's a little miniature. It's so good.
It's so rare we get miniature work on the show.
With this frothy water surrounding the cave floor. Oh, it's good.
It is very nice. And so the water is draining away, is what we see. And so they're testing all their systems, and they're like, okay, the air is breathable. This is great. And that's when O'Neill tells everyone, like, hey, I broke my leg. And they're, again, they're all like, how? How did you do that?
But they can't dwell on it too long because there is a mysterious knocking coming from the ceiling. Oh, what is that sound?
Jesus!
It's not Jesus. Aww. It is someone even hunkier than Jesus. It is the footsteps of someone else in this cavern who reaches
the hatch
up above and drops down. And wouldn't you know it, it's Rawlings, the hero explorer. Rawlings here is played by Gregory Paul Martin, son of the famed George Martin, the Beatles producer.
Oh,
yes.
I didn't know that.
The person with the greatest claim to the title of fifth Beatle is this actor's dad.
Huh.
Gregory Paul Martin here had previously acted on stage with Ian McKellen and is now a professional astrologer.
Okay.
You can get your stars read by this incredibly hunky man. Is he not the hunkiest man?
He's okay.
He has the
very... not really my type.
He's got the accent.
The accent's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
He's kind of... he's like peak, yes, this is in the 90s, what the perfect man would be. It's very Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, but he's also a throwback to, like, the bygone rugged masculine ideal. Like, he talks about climbing Everest in a later scene. Like, he's definitely that upper-class, athletic, highly educated. Like, Pierce Brosnan is a good pull because he's got, like, the air of James Bond around him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the...
yes.
Limitlessly capable in all fields.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, not my type.
you want a guy with a little character.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Someone who's limitlessly incapable in any number of fields, and but a select few.
Who knows, climbing Everest is the dumbest thing to do.
Well, not when he did it. It was still an achievement back then.
How long ago was it for him?
I think he stepped out of a 1990 ad, but the ad wanted you to think it was like 1959.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, but still, still.
They ask him, hey, how did you get here? And he's like, do you even know where here is? We are 10 miles beneath the mantle of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
What? You're in the outer core of the earth?
Yeah.
No, you're not.
No one's that sweaty down here.
Later, we hear that this tunnel they went down is something like, what, 4 kilometers?
Mm-hmm.
That the thinnest part of the oceanic crust is still thicker than that. You just had to say nearly to the Earth's mantle. That would be just as impressive and possible, or, you know, plausible.
2 miles.
2 miles beneath... To be clear, the mantle is 1,800 miles thick. But after that, what's another 2, right? Come on.
So they traveled, according to Google...
according to the 1,804
miles.
Well, that's... you gotta add on at least another 5 miles of the crust above the mantle.
Oh,
Let's just call it an even 1,900 while we're at it. That's how... No wonder they're worried about not having enough oxygen.
Yeah, you're not gonna. You're all definitely gonna die.
Fuel? Yeah.
The next thing that's out of Rawlings' mouth is to tell them, like, well, your submersible looks like shit, so we're all gonna die down here.
Just say... You're nearly to the mantle. Nearly to the mantle.
No.
2 miles above the mantle.
No, we're under it. No, we're under it. We're under it. It's that intense.
When?
What if, well, they're in a trench.
Was there a portal? Did they go through a portal?
If they're in a trench, they didn't have to travel as far.
Trenches don't go 1,000 miles down.
It's a really big trench. Congratulations, you've just found the mega big trench.
But okay, that's where they are. They are beneath the mantle, and therefore they are fucked.
So now it's time for the credits.
Mm-hmm.
A nice little musical break. And when we come back, the Sequest is like, oh my gosh, we've lost signal with them.
Mm-hmm.
They could be anywhere within 100 kilometers. We have no idea. And Wendy's like, I think they might be dead. I don't feel anything.
Even the psychic scans are blank. But Bridger is not giving up hope. Never. That's his boy.
That's his boy!
And three other people, too.
They're fine, too. But that's his boy! He loves Brody.
Mm-hmm. Well, he spent so much time protecting him. And even protecting his ego by having three other people go to the sexual harassment seminar.
Yeah.
So he didn't feel singled out.
Yeah. He's like, no, no, it's not because you did anything bad. Everyone has to do this.
We're doing it four by four. It's a rotating thing.
This
yeah,
completely
yeah.
normal and fine. Absolutely fine. So
they decide to prep for when they eventually find them. By putting a rescue pack on the Stinger.
Great idea.
The single seat craft.
Yeah.
Of all of their options, the one least useful for carrying loads or passengers.
But it has a rescue pack, so it's fine.
It's fine. It's
yeah.
fine. Anyway, back in the cave, they get out of the capsule and go into this really cool cave set.
Yeah.
I love all the fake rocks and stalactites.
O'Neill's also got, like, this really, shady-looking plastic cast
mm-hmm.
on his leg. It mm-hmm. basically looks like they took the clear, like, plastic that your grandma would cover their sofa in
mm-hmm.
and put a zipper on it and made it his cast.
Mm-hmm.
I question the future of medicine.
Well, you IV, you treat it with a UV lamp.
Oh.
And it becomes hardens. Rigid and
yeah,
and yeah, yeah, holds
yeah,
everything in
okay.
place. Yeah.
It's nice because you can do your nails at the same time.
Well, yeah, what else are you going to do on one leg?
So Lucas is the one to ask the important questions. Like, hey, dude, how'd you get down here?
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, I had a feeling there were tunnels under the mantle.
Ow, it's liquid! It's the whole thing! It's liquid!
So I was looking for a way in, but I didn't have time, because then I was sucked in.
He got sucked into his discovery, and he's been down here for a while,
like
long enough.
Like 3 days. This is the thing, it makes it sound like I've been down here for years. It's 3 days. He's been down there for 3 days.
Well, how many granola bars did he pack? You know, it's bad down here. It's bad.
If you are going in with, I'm going to find the tunnels under the mantle, you better be coming in with a year's worth of granola bars. Just in case.
But one thing he tells us about is that there is a regular flush cycle.
Yes.
It floods and drains and floods and drains every like 10 to 15 hours, I think he says.
Something like that.
And Lucas theorizes, what this must be is, I think Lucas and O'Neill are responsible for this insight. Maybe
Lucas definitely.
Lucas
I don't know
definitely.
If anyone else is.
Okay. But they're like, oh, well, that makes sense. Because as the hole sucks stuff into it, it'll get plugged up. And then that's when things drain like they are now. But eventually, all the heat from, you know, the magma surrounding us on all sides.
Ooh, magma buoy?
Maybe they should have called up Raleigh. They would have found these people a lot faster.
Maybe.
We'll like, boil the water, create pressure like a geyser, and blow it out. Blow out the blockage, and then it... The ocean floods back in and until it gets enough debris to clog back up again.
Yeah.
And Rawlings is like, yeah, I guess that is a plausible enough explanation for the thing I've been experiencing. Sure, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But Brody is the one to realize, wait, you motherfucker, you launched your distress signal and knew people would come get stuck with you too.
Yes, yes. He threw up his distress beacon into the flush cycle to try to get someone to rescue him. And while Rawlings is like, oh, what, I should just die in silence? Brody says, hey, you could have reprogrammed it to, like, have a warning. You could have said something in your fucking buoy message.
That was like, stay away, but also send help. Here's why.
Yeah. There's a big hole you're going to get sucked into and die.
Brody looks pissed.
Yes.
He's like, I only went to a sexual harassment seminar. I didn't go to a physical violence seminar. I'm going to punch your face.
Yeah, anger management is at a different base.
Yes, anger management. That's the term.
Yeah.
It's been a long week. Rawlings' pod, however, is out of oxygen.
Yes.
And the shuttle is pretty beat up. So they're like, we gotta figure out what we can do.
This is also when we learn that these caverns they're in aren't geological. Bum, bum, bum.
So over on the Sequest, they are approaching the outer boundaries of, you know, where they disappeared. And they haven't picked up anything. They haven't seen anything. Let's keep searching. We're just gonna keep searching.
Yes, this episode will continually cut back to the Sequest in their search, where nothing happens, where no progress is made. It's just a thing to cut to so time can advance in the cave.
Yes.
Yeah.
So in the cave, O'Neill has gotten the radio working, but the signal's just bouncing off the walls. It's not getting out. Lucas, being the little smarty pants he is like, okay, here's how we can get out. We can ride out of here in Rawlings' pod.
But in order to do it, we're going to put the jets from our launch onto it so it will have propulsion as we get pushed upward in the next flush.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're going to put our oxygen regenerator on it, too, so then it'll be fine. It'll work great. And Brody is like, yes, I knew there's a reason I asked you to be my roommate.
He says this to Henderson, who's like giving technical advice because she is both a helmsman and a mechanic, after all.
No, he says this to Lucas.
No, he says this to Henderson.
No, he says this right after Lucas talks about doing this pod thing.
I'm sure it's Henderson, because I was taken aback at the idea that he asked his subordinate lady to be his roommate at the sexual harassment seminar. I found that shocking and appalling.
He totally says this to Lucas. He says it to Lucas because Lucas literally before this happens is talking about how they can do this, how they can make it work. So the whole point is that Brody's like, yes, you're Mr. Smarty. You're going to get us out of here. You're the best.
I think it's Henderson.
I think you're wrong.
I think he...
I think it makes much more sense that Henderson had to bunk with O'Neill and they had like we dated once and this is awkward.
That would be fun. That would be a fun thing to do. They didn't do that.
Yes, they did.
It doesn't well, come I don't up know in if the
they,
episode.
They were roommates, but Brody is saying this to Lucas.
Mm-mm.
I have always Mm-mm. believed that. I absolutely Mm-mm. believe in it. Yes. Mm-mm. Yes.
He thought it was a how-to seminar and really misunderstood he's until also, the exams came around.
He's also not, like, turned in the correct direction to say this to Henderson.
It's to Henderson.
No! You are so wrong. He's wrong. He's wrong. You're wrong. So anyways, Tim's like, wait, what's that? And they all think that like he has like a signal or something. He's like, no, I hear something. And Lucas is like, yep, something's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Something is coming. And before they can like think too much on this, suddenly they all look down one of like the cave shafts and there is fire.
Yeah.
Shooting.
Yeah.
And it is a giant worm. It's a giant fucking lava worm.
Giant lava worm. Its face opens up in like a five-lobed thing. You know how the sandworms in David Lynch's Dune have three lobes?
Mm-hmm.
This has five. It's more of them.
And it shoots fire snot.
Yes.
It like comes out of its nostrils, basically.
And it shoots lasers.
Had lasers?
Yeah, it shoots lasers out of two of its five.
It has fire.
Those are lasers.
Brody shoots lasers at it.
Brody shoots little laser pulses. It shoots laser beams. The little pulses are ineffective. But then Brody rigs together a flamethrower.
Yes, and torches the fucker.
And that makes it back up. The lava worm doesn't like the flames.
Yes, but unfortunately, this fire worm from hell has torched some of the launch and has permanently broken the oxygen generator.
Yep.
And there, all they have left is the emergency oxygen tanks, which have about 5 minutes of air each in four tanks.
As they identify this incredible lava worm, the whole group is like, wow, we're a shoo-in for the Nobel Prize. And Rawlings says, unfortunately, they don't award it posthumously, because they're all certainly going to die. He is correct as a matter of policy. However, the Nobel Prize has been awarded posthumously twice, even so.
Oh.
Do you want to try to guess the conditions where such a thing happened?
They died doing their experiment.
No.
Or thing.
The awardees were named and announced while they still lived, but then they passed away before receiving the award at the following ceremony.
I mean, that's kind of what I was, like, thinking, but, like, they were, you know, still doing science-y things, and it's the thing that they're going to get the award for, but kills them.
They probably died for, like, normal human disease reasons.
Fine. They have to.
It turns out they did. They did have to.
They had to? Really?
Well, there was no way of avoiding it, or I think they would have.
So back on the Sequest, they haven't found any wreckage, and Bridger's like, that is great! That means they did not explode.
No.
Maybe we just passed them.
He's feeling that glass is half full. He's looking for an intact shuttle. Great news, actually.
So he tells random extra McKay, who's at the helm, to steer them in a certain direction. I think it's funny when they just randomly name an extra person.
Could have been Piccolo. He sometimes subs in at that. He subs in at
there.
Every station, I guess.
It is very weird to
he's
me.
He's a floater.
Yeah. He's like an intern.
So yes, back in the cave, they are surveying the equipment, and yeah, there are four emergency masks and five people, let alone the fact that it's going to be real hard to fit five bodies in the pod even so. So the big question is, who stays?
So they have a bit of everyone getting a little bit more panicky as this argument goes on, where Lucas is very like, we're gonna focus on fixing the pod up so we can leave and we'll worry about that later. And they're like, no, we can't have this hanging over our head. Absolutely. We need to decide. How are we gonna decide? What are we gonna do? And Lucas is like the cool-headed one.
Cause he doesn't want to think about it. This whole episode, he is going toward cold logic. That is where he finds his refuge.
It's mathematics. I hate how many times they say mathematics. I will,
yes.
I
not
that.
Math. The full, like, four syllable. Yeah, yeah. O'Neill brings up a very correct point. They, the UEO military, have a responsibility to save Lucas and Rawlings.
Yes.
And Rawlings says, hey, if you're worried about that, I'm no more a civilian than Lucas is. Like, yeah, bro, he is. You both are. Like,
if anything, he's more of one because he's almost a child.
Now,
women and children first. Like, it's a thing.
It is interesting that anytime there was danger in season one, like the whole Sequest just encircled Lucas like he was a baby in an elephant herd, right?
Yes.
They are all faced out to protect the child. But now, yeah, he's turned 18. He has a job. He's not the kid anymore. He's a peer.
Yeah.
And so that reaction doesn't happen here.
No. Which it's interesting. Like, I think it's an interesting approach with Brody and Henderson, who don't have this history with mm-hmm, him, right? Mm-hmm. I do think, though, that it's weird that O'Neill doesn't have more of that, because...
Mm-hmm. The most he gets is that line, and then everyone else in the cast treats it like he's just talking about Rawlings.
Yeah. And it's like, O'Neill's known him since he was, like, 14. He should be like, oh my god, like, no, you're child, protect the baby elephant. So it is an interesting dynamic. I do think you see a little bit of a shift of that later, but it's still, they look at him more as like a peer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So they decide now is the time to decide who stays. And they come up with, all right, it's time to ask for volunteers. And O'Neill says first, essentially, I'm going to heaven. It's cool.
I'll go. You're all fucking sinners.
He doesn't say it like that. That is not the tone. It is a somber self-sacrifice. The only comfort he has in his heart is a unshakable belief that there is a better place to go to that he recognizes no one else in this cavern shares.
Yes. He's also like, I'm injured.
Yeah. That's true. He's playing the odds, the mathematics.
You know, this is essentially like we're on the Oregon Trail. This broken leg is going to kill me. Like, we might as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Feed me to the worm.
Yeah, as a sacrifice. But the matter of what he says is like, come on, I'm good with the big guy. It's fine. It's fine.
He'll let me in. I don't know about you guys. Like,
but Brody's not accepting that. Brody says, no, rank is responsibility. It is my duty to send all of you to safety and cover your rear. And Lucas shuts that down because it's not going down with the ship. This is actually a very different situation.
And he's like, it's a shuttle. It's not a ship. Like, we don't need to do this. And so his suggestion is a lottery.
Mm-hmm.
That they're going to fix it first and then they'll do a drawing. And it's, you know, just the odds are whoever it is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so they're all like, okay, fine. And then he's like, but Tim, if it makes you feel better, you can totally pray that someone finds us. That's great.
That's great.
Pray as much as you want.
Keep it up, big guy.
You got it.
So, back on Le Sequest.
Mm-hmm.
It is time for Darwin to be like, hey, where's my friends? You're looking for my friends, right?
Let me help. Give Darwin air pack. And they're like, no, no, we're going too fast for that. And he's like, come back later. I eat fish. It's fine. Like, give me air pack. And Ford is like, you know, Bridger, Darwin might be able to find this better.
Mm-hmm.
Though it's dangerous and, like, whatever happened to them could happen to him. So, like, I understand if you're just scared to lose your dolphin, too.
And Darwin insists he is not scared. Quote, Darwin, famous shark fighter. I want to see that.
Yeah. And then he's like, give me air pack, Bridger. Give me air pack.
He keeps saying it over and over. He's demanding. He's just like, shut your ass, Bridger, and give me air pack.
Air pack.
Air pack air now. Pack. Now.
Air pack. Let's do this.
Shake a leg, old man. Air pack.
Is he addicted to the air pack? Is it like a drug to him at this point? It's like, that sweet oxygen.
Oh, that's the good stuff.
Pure. It's so pure. So they have to cave to this little fucker.
Yeah.
He's not going to stop. He's just going to keep chanting, give me air pack.
He's going to start throwing fish onto the bridge. I don't know.
He is a famous shark hunter. Just watch out.
Mm-hmm,
he might catch one and bring it to the bridge.
That's what he'll do. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so back in the cave, Henderson and Marcus are working on a thing on the pod.
She's flirting with Mr. Hunky.
He's flirting a lot with her.
That's for sure. Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of hitting on her going on.
It's sort of like 80-20 in his favor, yeah.
You know, eventually, though, she's just like, how can you be calm in a time like this? As she is, like, starting to panic the... scenario is setting in of mm-hmm. what is happening.
Henderson is very scared. She says that she's beginning to have an anxiety attack, and she sets down her tools as she's building this Frankenpod of parts, and is like talking about her fears and her anxieties. And it's Lonnie Henderson's best moment in the show to this point.
Yeah.
I think this is her best episode so far.
Well, yeah, because she actually gets to do shit in this episode and have conversations. Yes. And, like, it isn't just she's in it because it revolves around someone else.
She has her own perspective and isn't there to facilitate someone else or to just be flighty. Like, she has depth now. She has feelings. Mm-hmm. And she asks Mr. Hunky to hold her until the shakes go away.
She's really actually like a drug addict and it's like
that's the shake sign.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Okay. That's what she keeps in the stuffed animal.
That
and why it couldn't leave her desk or her bridge station. It had to be right there next to
there,
her.
Right there.
Yeah.
So Lucas is working on some designs and Brody's like, "Hey Lucas, you ever designed a submarine before?" And Lucas is like, "Yeah, like 10 or 15 times on the back of placemats." "Excuse me?
You made the Stinger. We've mentioned the Stinger."
The Stinger has been mentioned multiple times in this episode. You designed that.
You made the Stinger. You made half of it. You made roughly half of the Stinger.
What?
You fell asleep in it. It was a really sweet moment.
Yeah. All the fan vids love it. Like, we cannot forget this.
What if the line was like, "Dude, I made the fucking Stinger." And Brody's like, "Oh, shit. Okay. All
you
right.
You did?
Damn.
I didn't know that.
That was before my time here.
How old were you?" Those things have been around for a few years. Shit.
And then Lucas has to turn around and say, "Yeah, but I made it out of bespoke parts, not this kludge of incompatible, like, this comes from this manufacturer and this has this voltage rating. It's a different thing." And Brody's like, "Oh, that's the scene I would make. But sure, all right."
Oh, see, I was thinking, like, then Brody would, like, share some, like, war story he has from when, like, he drove his own, like, version of the Stinger. Because, you know, they've now, like, it's being manufactured elsewhere. And he's like, "Right. You know, that's when I got shot in the shoulder."
He got Stang.
It's his, like, girl picking up boat.
Yeah, which is a little sad because it's a one-seater.
We're going to learn that's not true. Brody then is like, "Hey, Lucas, if we're all going to like die and shit, maybe you should go tell her." And he's like, "I don't know what are you talking about? Tell who what?"
"Tell Henderson about that crush you have on her. Because sometimes we do season one things over again."
And Lucas is like, "I'm going to go test stuff."
Yeah, I'm going to test some things. Yeah.
Are there some times where, like, Lucas has, like, looked at Henderson because, yeah, she's a girl and she's attractive?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. There hasn't been a storyline of Lucas having an actual crush on her.
No. Like, he's not fantasizing about her as a mermaid.
This isn't Katie. This isn't Hitchcock. Like, what? It's so...
But the age gap is a lot smaller than that.
True. But it's so forced.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, I don't feel like he... There's no established crush to the level of, "I should tell her in case we die."
Right. But the difference between the Hitchcock and this apparent Henderson crush is, like, in the first season version, it was treated as like this last gasp of childhood. Mm-hmm. It was this childish impossibility. And like, "Come on, Lucas, we're all beyond that. I love you as a colleague that I care for." And he's like, "Yeah, you're right." But now you get the feeling that, like, it could happen. They all survive this. It could happen.
It'd be weird.
It would be weirder than anyone in the show is treating it.
Yeah. So, back on the Sequest.
They are weary.
They are so sleepy because they've been going at this for hours and hours. And Wendy is like, Oh man, if they are by us, they are probably sleeping. Even if they're not by you, maybe they would be sleeping because they also have been up for hours and hours. They're on like the same time zone as you. Like, or same like time operation.
But we know they're not. Because they're very busy.
Yes, they're very busy. But I just think it's such a weird revelation because I'm like, they would not, if something happened to them, be sleeping because it's the sleepy time. They'd be sleeping because they've been up for 48 hours.
Right, right.
And they're exhausted.
But the important thing is that a sleeping person is more readily found through her psychic scans. And therefore, the radius that they would have to be within for her to find them would be larger were they asleep. So that's why she has to go off to her room to, like, light a candle and put on her meditating music.
Yeah.
To try to really search really hard.
Rain noises.
Yeah, yeah. But yes, now Lucas is performing engine tests on this kludge of a Frankenpod.
Yes, and guess what? It works!
It works! Everyone's so happy! Yay! Yeah. They're saved. Most of them are saved, because it's time for the lottery!
Yes, I do love that they're all just like, yes! Yeah! And Lucas is like, cool, it worked, but I know what's next. They've all forgotten. Let me burst their bubble!
So he holds out a fistful of wires, because they do not have straws. One of the five is cut short. There is some discussion about odds in this. As they draw, one person, it is Mr. Hunky, says that the sooner you pick, the better your odds are. And Lucas counters, it's one in five for everybody regardless. I feel like this is related to the Monty Hall problem. Of like ways that probability can work out and the correct answer is not always the intuitive answer. But I'll leave that as an exercise for the listener. What happens is Brody goes first, long wire. O'Neill, long wire. Henderson gets put forward to go next by Mr. Hunky. He says the thing about her going first gives her better odds. She gets a long wire. And then he picks himself, long wire.
And Brody is like, come on, man, this is a sick joke. What's going on? And Lucas is like, no, that's not a joke. The odds were the same. I got the short one.
What he argues, what could be more fair than me getting screwed by my own system? That proves the fairness. And so, yeah, he's the one who stays behind. No one is happy about this.
No. Brody wants to be like, let's go best, like, two out of three. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Let's do it again. And Lucas is not having it, and he tells them all to leave him alone and runs off into the cave.
Often in a story like this, there will be a twist or a reveal or dramatic irony. Whenever you learn the information, it is learned that someone tampered with the straws, right? They were palming it, or none of them were short, and like you never see Lucas hold up a short wire. We just trust that he has it, and that seems to be accurate.
Yeah.
It is never revealed that this was rigged in any way.
No. And, like, he had, like, all the wires were put in, like, a bag they were pulling from that you couldn't see. Like, there is nothing that this was a setup or happened this way. It's just, it truly happened.
It's just so often rigged in stories like this.
So it's weird because, yeah, you think it's going to be different. And then it's also refreshing that, no, we are going to sit for a while in this, the weight of this, the fact that Lucas, the youngest, the barely not a child, is going to stay behind and die.
Because I think O'Neill and Brody definitely would have rigged it so they stay.
Yes.
And this Explorer Man, 50-50. Like, he seems like the type to maybe do it. They also keep setting him up as a very self-important kind of blowhard, despite his many actual achievements.
Yes. So Wendy is trying to sense them. She's doing sensey things.
She's in the dark, thinking real hard.
Yeah. Henderson goes to find Lucas in the cave.
leaning on a stalagmite.
Yes. You're not allowed to do that most places. He's a lucky boy.
They frown on that generally.
And he's like, you know what? Fuck it. If I'm going to die, I'm going to touch one of these babies. I'm going to hug it. I'm going to sleep on it. No one can stop me.
Now, the reality of this cave would make geologic features like stalactites and stalagmites impossible.
Yes.
Never mind. Never mind. That's actually worm poop. It just looks like a stalagmite.
Probably is worm
poop. It's probably worm
poop. Where is Krieg when you need him?
He's safe and dry and loving it. That's where he is.
So Henderson, you know, goes to him and is like, are you sure you actually want to be alone? And sits down next to him.
And Lucas, yet again, taking refuge in his position as a scientist, which he has reclaimed for this one episode. But hey, let's be thankful for it. Like, is finding solace in this as his last scientific investigation. It is time to test the hypothesis of what comes after death.
Yes.
It is time to have all of his many questions answered for once and for all.
Yeah. And Henderson is like, how about we just share the breather? We can both make it. Like, you and I are both small. Let's share oxygen. And he's like, we'll both die.
Yeah.
Like, there's not enough. You'll be lucky to make it to the surface by yourself.
And Lonnie Henderson, mechanic and helmsman, says, quote, I don't like this mathematics stuff. Please stop putting words like that in the girl's mouth. Please, please, just stop it. Do not do that.
And let's stop using the word mathematics. No one uses that. But then Henderson's like, is there anything you want?
Mm-hmm.
Names off some things like, you know, all the desserts from the, you know,
from rations. The MREs. Yeah, yeah.
Do you, you know, this or that, or me to be with you?
That hangs in all of its ambiguity.
What do you mean? What do you mean by be with you?
Lots of ambiguity.
What do you mean? What are you offering?
Like I said, it could happen. It could happen.
Are you propositioning basically a child?
He's at least 17.
I'm pretty sure he's supposed to be 18. But, like, it's weird. It's weird.
She failed the test. What more do you want to know?
Makes sense.
So Lucas dispels some of the implications by asking, just hold me until I fall asleep. She passes Mr. Hunky's favor on.
Yeah.
He doesn't know that's what he asked for, but that's how it worked out.
And so she wraps her arm around him, and they just sit there in the most uncomfortable position to fall asleep in. There is no way it's happening in that position.
Sitting on some rocks. Well, they are exhausted. There's no way they're not falling asleep standing up. This is better, actually.
So back on the SeaQuest, Wendy is doing her sensing, and it's starting to work because she has ended up in Cloud World.
She is walking through the same gospel album commercial where AI Bridger used to live.
Yes. I'm just waiting for, like, Enya to start. And while she is walking through Cloud World, she hears a little bit of Lucas, his voice. And then she calls out to him.
That's a line from the gay version of Mambo Number 5.
Just a little bit of Lucas.
Why didn't Lubega put out a version with a bunch of dudes' names?
He didn't have the guts.
It was a different world. It was a different world.
Now.
You double your earnings is what you do. He's not dead. He could, right?
I don't know.
Lubega come out.
I haven't exactly, like, Googled the
Mambo
man.
Number 6. It's the exact same song, but it's all dude
it's
names.
It's all dudes now. Yeah.
The world is ready.
A little bit of Steven.
On my mind.
A little bit of Patrick.
By my side.
A little bit of Diego.
Is all I need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hear a little bit of Lucas. So she calls out to Lucas with her brain.
I just like the things the show makes us say sometimes.
And so Lucas wakes up because he hears brain things. And then Wendy shoots up out of her chair like, oh my god, they're alive and I have to go tell everyone.
So as Lucas wakes up, Henderson next to him, and they notice that the thin layer of water is churning around them and like, oh yeah, we probably shouldn't take a nap with the impending geyser eruption and all.
Yes, so they rush back to the pod as Wendy rushes to the bridge of the Sea Quest to be like, I can feel him.
Joanna. Okay. Do you think that psychic found you? Suddenly I'm in the brain zone.
There's lots of clouds.
With your yellow hair.
Wendy, stop feeling Lucas. It's weird. This is why everyone needs a sexual harassment training, is because they're all, like, oddly hitting on a child.
I just want to reach out and touch your beautiful brain.
Stop it!
Stop it!
It's his brain.
So, Dr. Smith has a lead, and Darwin is also like, yeah, I didn't see anything over there, but the water tastes weird.
It's the wrong ocean. Too much salt. Mm-mm. Now, nasty.
Now you might have been thinking, this episode is clearly another run at bad water. But how wrong could you be? The water is too salty. It's the exact opposite. It's totally different.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like bad water.
And Ford is like, well, you know, that Marcus Rawlings guy was last in the Hemingway Trench, and it has a higher salt content.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, but that's on the opposite side of the world. Cut back to the cave where the water is just rushing in.
Mm-hmm.
And Lucas does the most epic, like, slip.
Yes.
In the water. It's yes. Great. You know, Henderson's climbing in the pod and he's rushing there. It's just the water is now just pouring in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They're looking for Rawlings. Yeah. They can't find him. And then he comes on the screen in his own pod because he's in the other pod. He's in the Sequest launch. He gave up his seat to save Lucas. He's going to try to ride out this eruption and hope that they escape and maybe can send someone back for him.
Yes. And so Lucas is like, no, you won. I'm not going to do it. And he's like, no, take my place. I prefer free will.
He prefers free will to mathematics.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was angry by that point about mathematics. But he tells Lucas that, you know, he will be a better man and he can go tell everyone about how he was very heroic.
Mm-hmm. He does ask for Lucas to make a moving speech to the media, which will drive all his exes around the world crazy.
Mm-hmm. And though, in a move of, you know, him actually owning up to stuff, he's like, and you guys are right, like, I did panic, and I did lead you all here, because I didn't want to die alone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So go and save yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Make an amends here. And so Lucas gets in and is trying to still talk to Rawlings, but the signal gets cut and they strap in and the water has now filled the cavern.
Mm-hmm. So Henderson is piloting them out, calling out what she needs for Lucas to, like, deal with the fuel mixture and the throttle. And so he's co-piloting. O'Neill's tank runs out of air first and Brody is sharing his mask once O'Neill passes out, and it's loud and it's shouty and it's shaky, and they keep going and going, and there's lots of tension.
Well, all this is happening, the Sequest has been searching, and mm-hmm. Ortiz has caught on. He's like, hey, there's something that seems like a volcanic eruption, and they're like, go there! Mm-hmm, go there! Mm-hmm. That's gotta be it.
They get up. There are now two masks empty. There's no fuel left to reach the surface. Hope is fading, and so are their jets.
And so eventually, as they are down to Henderson having air and Lucas having an air mask that he is passing amongst all the boys, they finally shoot out.
Mm-hmm.
But they realize they're not going to make the surface in time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And as they're having this realization, the Sequest sends out their grappling hook because they spotted him.
Yes. Once again, for the first time in a long, long, long time, the day is saved by a new cool thing the Sequest can do.
They've used their grappling hook before.
They have?
Yeah. This is not the first time we've seen the grappling hook.
Okay, well, I'm glad to see it back.
Yeah. They've used it before. I don't remember what episode.
Is it the Mars capsule rescue, maybe?
Maybe.
Maybe.
They've definitely used it like once or twice before.
Okay.
It's not often, but it's not the first time we've seen it.
Sure.
Yeah.
But they're rescued. Yay!
Yes, they are rescued, which is great because, man, they are like all talking and breathing a lot for a space having no air. And so they pull the launch in and everyone's coming off. Lucas is the last one off, but he does not dawdle. And as Bridger's trying to be like, are you okay? Like, how you doing? He is immediately at the screen in the launch bay. Like, what's at the second port? And like, well, it's the Stinger with a rescue pack. And he's like, that's perfect.
That could make it. Yeah.
And Bridger turns to Brody and is like, what is he talking about? And Brody fills him in about Rawlings as Lucas runs out the door and then Bridger tries to follow him.
Now, emotionally, dramatically, this is Lucas's time. This is his job. He should be the one to do it from that point of view.
Yes.
But, like, from a realistic or practical, like an in-fiction point of view, this should be Tony Piccolo or Ford. Because they are not oxygen-starved. They aren't CO2 poisoned or exhausted.
Yes, but they don't. They don't know where to go.
They don't know the hole. They haven't sailed this tunnel.
They have no idea where to go. They don't know what's down there. The fact of how much time it would take to just explain what happened, where they were, and where they'd need to go, not practical at all.
Okay.
It would have to be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think, like, okay, it would be Brody being like, we have to go back, and I'll go, because I know where to go. But Lucas is like, we are not fucking waiting. I'm going.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, yes, as he rushes to the Stinger, he runs into a different one of his friends, Dagwood.
Well, as he runs into Dagwood, Ford is on the, and we can say radio, sure. He's,
The PA?
The PA. He's on the PA saying that they need to shut down that launch bay. No one can get out. And he's saying this as Lucas runs in, Dagwood's hearing this, seeing him, and he's like, what's going on, Lucas? What you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I gotta go get a friend. We left someone behind. And he's like, well, I'm your friend. I will go with you. And he's like, no, you're gonna die down there. And he's like, well, I will die with you. I'm your friend. That's what friends do. We die together, Lucas. And so Dagwood goes with Lucas on what is supposed to be a single person shuttle.
Which is
why we've learned this is no longer a single-person shuttle.
No. I don't think Dagwood would fit in the front seat of this Stinger that apparently has a rear seat nowadays.
Apparently has two. Because Lucas is not like, hey, Dagwood, if you come, I can't bring the guy back. He's like, okay, fine, let's go. And so they get into the launch and they seal it just as, like, Tony and Ford and Bridger are, like, rushing there and they, like, can't get in. And Lucas is like, I gotta do this. And Bridger's like, no, come back. And he's like, no, I gotta do this. Give me the coordinates I need because there's a chance I can make it if you help. And so he's like, fine.
Bridger gives in and Ortiz calls out the bearing and he dives right back down in that hole.
Yes. As he gets down there.
It's the same thing, but in reverse. And he's going down, and all that debris that would normally plug up the hole is on the way. And Dagwood warns him, hey, don't worry, the wall is bad, but I'd dodge the rocks too if I were you. And then so now we gotta dodge the rocks.
And as it gets down there, it does a hard dock with the launch. And he goes into the launch that is not supposed to have any air, because Rawlings is also, like, passed out almost on the floor, but he's breathing fine. And is like, hey, come on, we got back. We gotta get in here. Get into the Stinger. So now there's three grown men in the Stinger.
Well, Rawlings is on Lucas's lap. Clearly.
And so they start hightailing it out, but the dragon worm is back. and it is following them up the tunnel.
Worm chase!
As they're coming up and they finally get radio contact again, Lucas is like, I'm on my way, but you gotta be ready with the lasers. And so he shoots out, and the worm comes up too, like, doing the whole, like, as they shoot it with lasers, and it explodes and dies. And Ortiz is like,
we just
killed this thing we've never seen before. Screw science.
Two of its five jaws are blown off. It looks pretty cool. And they can, grapnel it out and bring a dead specimen to get studied somewhere, right? That's fine.
A piece of it. How long is that worm?
We're about to find out.
I don't think they can take the whole thing out of the hole. I think that thing goes on for 2 miles under the mantle.
Oh, so it's 1,800 miles long?
Yes.
Okay.
Some days later, the next day, who knows, Rawlings is leaving.
Uh-huh.
And, he's saying his goodbyes, and him and Lucas are having a little moment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you ever need anything, let me know. And he's like, well, when you're giving those interviews, if you could tell them how self-sacrificing I was... So maybe I can get a girlfriend out of this.
Yeah. Is this one of our possible future Lucas characters? It has been a while since, Lucas added one more of his new role models to choose from.
I don't think it's to that point.
Okay.
They've come to an understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel like he... needs that anymore.
You don't think Heroic Explorer is somewhere on Lucas's possible future career paths?
He could be an explorer, I guess. But I don't feel like he's gonna go, it's because of that guy.
Sure.
I think Lucas knows he's a better person than Rawlings is.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't pick him to... it's not like back when he was younger and it was like the regulator's cool.
Yeah.
He's fucking weird and cool. I want to be like him. Now he's like, you were kind of selfish. And I can be like you, but I rise above.
Now, somewhere in this episode, at least according to IMDb, there is a character known as the German Visitor. I didn't spot this. But he is supposedly played by Will Rotgen, who I only noted down because he played Dinotopia Citizen Number 4 in the 2002 miniseries. And I wanted to talk about the Dinotopia 2002 miniseries.
I love the Dinotopia miniseries.
To make you happy.
I love the Dinotopia books, and the miniseries was so good.
Now most...
It had Wentworth Miller.
Most of Will Rotgen's performances, especially those with, names, have been back in his native Germany.
Mm.
But yeah, that's the end of the action of the episode of Dead End. But of course, that's not the end, because we have to have our credits brightened up with Marco Sanchez visiting SeaWorld Orlando, hanging out with the pinnipeds, and helping all us viewers tell them apart.
Yes.
Sea lions are the really noisy ones.
Didn't know that. Thank you. Very helpful there. Yeah. Good job.
But that's Mr. Sanchez's fish fact. What's your fish fact, dear?
My fish fact is about the bearded fireworm.
The bearded fireworm?
Yes. It is a type of marine bristle worm native to the tropical Atlantic Ocean and the Mediterranean Sea.
Mm.
The bearded fireworm is somewhere between 6 to 12 inches long.
Okay.
And is a slow creature and typically is not considered a threat to humans.
It's trying its best, gosh!
Unless you touch it.
Oh.
If you touch it.
Oh.
The bristles... when flared, can penetrate your skin, injecting a powerful neurotoxin.
Ooh.
And produce intense irritation and painful burning. The sting can also lead to nausea and dizziness, and that can last for hours after you try to take care of So watch out for the bearded fireworm. Watch it is out. Not going to shoot fire at you, but it's going to make you feel like you're on fire. What's your fish fact?
Well, my fish fact is more of a boat fact.
Boat fact.
I would like to talk about American submarine NR-1.
Oh.
The closest thing we have to a real SeaQuest.
Oh.
It was launched in January 1969 and is a U.S. Navy nuclear-powered research submarine.
Oh.
It has a test depth of 910 meters. This is more than double what a military sub can do. It is also well short of getting to the bottom of any Earth's oceans.
Yeah.
But it was used in all sorts of search and rescue efforts. It got parts of the Challenger shuttle from off the ocean floor.
Does it have grappling hooks?
It has little wheels to roll along the ocean floor, you know, what bits it can get to.
No.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah.
During the airing of SeaQuest in the year 1995, NR-1 explored the wreck of the HMHS Britannic, sister ship of the Titanic.
Oh.
Do you want to know who was aboard on that exploration mission?
Let me guess that it's a certain buddy of ours.
It's Bob Ballard!
Yeah.
Yes, he was on Real SeaQuest. Now, there are some ways that it was very much unlike the fictional SeaQuest. For one, it fit a maximum of, say, 13 people aboard.
Oh, that's not very big.
However,
that's just a sexual harassment class.
Generally, two of those people were civilian scientists.
Civilian scientists.
Yeah. Now, while SeaQuest is incredibly fast, NR-1 could travel at approximately 4 knots.
Oh, Jesus.
It was generally towed by its minder ship to wherever it had to go.
Oh, my God. That's so slow.
Now, because it was so small, generally holding about 10 men at a time, while they could stay at sea for as long as they wished, the limiting factor was food. They had no kitchen, so they ate frozen TV dinners.
Oh, Jesus.
They also had no bathing facilities. The crew bathed once a week with a bucket of water.
It was so smelly down there.
Allison J. Hollifield, who commanded the sub in the mid-70s, said, quote, "Everybody on NR-1 got sick. It was only a matter of whether you were throwing up or not throwing up."
No! Why? Don't do this! Abort! Abort the mission!
So, it's a good thing that the fictional science of, I mean, what are we talking, more than 40 years later, advanced so far, especially in terms of livability.
Yeah.
Let alone, yes, speed and depth, and most of all, size.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. American Submarine NR-1.
Yeah. So what did you think about this episode?
Like I said at the top, and now I can say more completely with examples, this is a good episode. The drama is good. Lucas, great Lucas episode.
Mm-hmm.
Brandis is killing it. Unfortunately, nothing interesting is happening on the SeaQuest. But in the cave, like, yeah, it is the best Henderson episode. She is really become a three-dimensional character this week for the first time, thank goodness. It's been a while since Lucas got anything this meaty to do. I like the guest guy. I like that he cuts this dashing figure. He's self-mythologizing, but, like, clearly has the skills and the accolades to back it up. Like, he might self-mythologize, but the myths are based on actual accomplishments. Like, he did all those things. He is that good. So maybe he's earned being a little big, having a bit of a big head, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes through a bit of a journey on his own. Like, it's good stuff wrapped up in idiotic nonsense. But if you make the drama good enough, I don't care. I will laugh that you don't know what the mantle is all of a sudden, and I will think it's a little frustrating that it could have been a sea crab. It's not as cool as the stinger. Stinger's fast and exciting, but it could have been a sea crab. Why not?
No, I don't. You couldn't send a sea. Sea crabs don't move fast enough. If this guy's like gonna die.
Sure.
You want to go down there with the stinger or something that can move fast.
You could at least establish that, our retool of the stinger to put in extra seats has been a real success.
They could have easily done that when it was like, hey, have you ever designed a submarine before? And be like, yes, I designed the stinger and I actually just redesigned it. So now it can seat more than one person.
Maybe you have a real minor C plot of some people on SeaQuest killing the time and distracting themselves from their frustration because there's nothing to do but wait as they do their search patterns by modifying the stinger.
Or you just see them actually putting the rescue pack on it and you can see, like, oh, there is more space in this stinger than there used to be.
But that continuity nitpick is something that I set aside when the drama is good. Mm-hmm. And the drama is good.
Mm-hmm. This has always been one of my favorite episodes. Mm-hmm. Like, this is never a skip for me. I don't skip this episode. I've always loved this episode. I love
Lava Worm. Very silly.
I love the Lava Worm. And I kind of love that, like, we just don't question the Lava Worm or, like, why it exists, and we never talk about it again.
No.
Right? Like, there's no, like, how does that exist? How does it work? Like, nope. There's a lava worm, and it made these tunnels, and that's it. It's fine. No one, when it pops up, like, and they have to shoot it down, is like, oh my god, what's this? No one. They're just like, hey, cool, you killed this thing. But I love Lucas in this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so nice to see him have a starring moment, to see him be competent and, you know, could we say mathematics less? Yes. But, like, this is going back to core Lucas. He knows how to do things. He knows how to create things and fix things and make new things. And they just let him do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do appreciate the fact, like, no one questions it, right?
Right.
They're like, yes, Lucas knows what to do. We're going to follow his plan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't get to see a lot of time of him, like, doing this type of stuff.
Like how in the first season, it took until around the midway point to get our first, like, ocean defender is believed to be dead, but is actually alive, but perhaps they've gone too far.
Mm-hmm.
And then they keep doing that in different ways over and over and over again.
Yeah.
It takes about until the halfway point of season two to get one of its favorite kinds of stories. A story that feels like it could have been in season one, except they add a giant sea monster somewhere. This is the first, and it's going to keep happening.
The one thing I would have loved to have seen in this episode, which it wouldn't happen in a season two episode, but if it was season one, is that, like, they allude to it, and, like, it's not that Bridger doesn't care. You can see he cares, and they, you know, the whole, like, Ford talking to Bridger about, like, dealing with the loss, basically, of Lucas, and you don't want to lose your dolphin.
Mm-hmm.
But to see more of Bridger worried, more of when Lucas gets back and Bridger really losing it that Lucas has left, like, that could have been more extreme. Or when he finally comes back again, like, their embrace of, like, oh my god, don't do that to me. Like, some of that would have been so good, and it's not something that's going to happen in season two, really.
I mean, season two seems much more invested in its characters having character moments, but especially the new characters. The old ones are allowed to coast a little more, and they get more than they used to, because season one was often bad about that. Like, look at all the interviews where actors say, well, I know this much stuff about the character, but you, the viewer, know this much stuff about the character, right? It's better on that front, but this show has never been good about giving all 9 of its primary cast something to do every single week.
Never. No. But it's there is in season 2, there is a different approach to the Lucas Bridger relationship.
Yes. Yes. And that was always front and center in season 1. Yes.
And this is an episode that's just like, oh man, if you would have given me just a smidgen more.
Mm-hmm.
Just how more intense it would have made it, right? How much mm-hmm. more serious it would have made those moments.
Right.
And it would have been so good. It mm-hmm, would have been mm-hmm. so satisfying. And yeah. It's fine as it is, but it's like, oh man, give me just an ounce of what we had there.
Right. Like the one bit where season 1 really got characters right and consistently right and always in the foreground was like the family trio, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas season 2 is generally better, but with really spreading it out around the web,
mm-hmm.
there's no one thing
yeah.
or one group of things that is 4 out of 5 times the A-plot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It used to be the Paella Boys, but even they've spread around.
Yeah, which I do appreciate that this episode also mixes up character interaction, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You don't get a lot of these 4 together. You get them in different groupings, but mm-hmm. not... There's not a lot of Lucas and Brody
yeah.
until this point.
I was going to say Lucas Henderson until this point.
There's small Lucas Henderson yeah, scenes. Yeah. But...
Not as much as they imply in that one scene.
Yeah. Yes. But yeah, it's, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. it's a good one. I like this one.
And O'Neill has been very in the background.
Yeah.
I mean, of the 5 people in the cave, he's still in the background, but that still puts him this week on a tier above everyone on Sequest.
But at least they gave it a reason. It's because his leg is broken.
It's because his leg is broken. Like,
he can't move.
Like we were saying, like I've been saying previously, the shift in focus away from the ship's systems means a shift away from Ortiz and O'Neill, except they found Marco Sanchez is really cool with a gun.
Yeah.
Tim O'Neill.
Not cool with a gun.
You're not going to give that guy a gun. No. So, like, if we pull away from communications and the language station being important, we've pulled away from O'Neill being important.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what else can we give Ted Raimi to do? They haven't solved that problem yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it be mildly psychic like that one time?
No, we forgot
that. Yeah. Could be. but I guess to sum all that up, like, if it sounds like I'm putting a lot of negatives on this episode that I keep insisting I like quite a bit, it's the first season 2 episode in a while that makes me think they could do better. Like, you've proven you can make it work. Now I want to bring everything up to this level mm-hmm. and beyond this level.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to burden the Plants That Roar Like Dinosaurs episode with any sort of expectations. You know, you
roar.
No, thank you. No.
Roy! Roy! They're just such big fans.
Anyhow, that is it for our great return to making Whiskers regularly. Again, if you want to know when we're going to be delayed and when we're coming back from a quick break, the best thing you can do is follow us on Blue Sky at Whiskers. That's WSKRS.bisky.social.
Mm-hmm.
And those of you who do know that you still could have had me in your life during that break. In the meantime, 2 episodes of other podcasts with me guesting came out. The first was the 210th episode of Extra Credit, which is a show where they find terrible things online and read it with enthusiasm. The episode is called Justin and Me and Voon Moon Make 3. It is about... something. we read the website of a new age creator who believes with his whole heart that his absolute best friend, creative collaborator, and perhaps soulmate was reincarnated in the body of Justin Bieber in the year 2008.
Okay.
So
that's a thought.
You can find that at thefmin.us. The other is I was on the sixth episode of Side 6 Soundscapes. That is Giant Robot FM's Patreon-exclusive coverage week to week of the currently running Gundam show called G-Quax.
It's got my favorite sassy boy.
Or does it? It does in the flashbacks.
It does in the flashbacks.
That's for sure.
I had it in a flashback. That's all I needed.
So yeah, we had a lot of fun talking about the episode with no robot fights in it, as it turns out.
Goodness.
But a lot of forward momentum that, you know, in the episodes that have aired between then and now when you're hearing this, oh boy, have things popped off. But yeah, that was a good time. In it, I share two theories that so far, at the time I'm saying these words, have not been contradicted by the show, and one of them, I think, has become even more likely, despite the fact that the idea was to come up with things that would never actually be the case.
Sometimes we're good at that.
Sometimes. Hey, Sex Archie folks. People who followed us from Sex Archie, you know.
Mm-hmm. Cult in the Woods! I was so fucking right! I haven't been on anything. I've been busy.
That's
true. I'm the reason we haven't recorded.
Oh, boy. Anyhow, with that, I'm going to ask you for a few simple things. Number one, like I said, follow us on Blue Sky. You'll get all the latest news, all the latest updates, and some fun facts and gags every single day.
You can also leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to us. 5-star required. and if you give us a 5-star one and leave actually a note, we might read it on a future episode.
Like Crochet Cryptids did. Left a 5-star rating and a review titled Ford is Still Amazing.
Yes.
And they said, thank you so much for liking something I posted on Blue Sky. I wouldn't have found my go-to work podcast without it.
Oh my god!
Also, realized I conflated some of season 1 and 2 together. Thanks for your work. It is greatly appreciated. Thank you, Crochet Cryptids.
That's so exciting!
Yeah!
I hope you listen with headsets.
Hell yeah, brother!
So yeah, leave us a rating and review and be like that person.
Mm-hmm.
You should also tell your friends.
You should. That's like leaving a rating and review in your friend's heart.
Yes.
And doesn't your friend deserve 5 stars in
their
heart?
Anything less is not good. What, am I a little forceful?
I mean, they are your friend, aren't they?
So yeah, I think that's it.
I think that is it.
So, with that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant, and in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger,
for beneath the surface lies the future.